Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 26th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Torin Ulbrichtsen and Lena Gilbertson about the Big Brothers Big Sisters School Mentoring Program. Simshian Carver, Abel Ryan will be here to talk about his demonstrations at the Alaska State Museum this weekend. We'll also talk to Katie Basler about things happening at the University of Alaska Southeast. And I'll talk to singer-songwriter nerd Marianne Call at her concert tomorrow night at the Rookery. We'll also talk with diva Frances Field from the Juneau Lyric Opera. That Writer's Almanac music more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with scattered showers, low temperatures around 48 degrees with light winds. Forecast for Saturday, rain likely. Sunday looks like rain also as well.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Haida Tribe in southeast Alaska is celebrating the completion of a major Salmon River restoration project in the Tungus National Forest. The Harris River and one of its main tributaries, Fubar Creek, are located within the Haida's traditional lands of Prince of Wales Island near Ketchikan. The rivers historically provided abundant fish runs. Both waterways suffered loss of fish habitat from logging in the 1950s and 60s before passage of modern-day forestry laws. The creek was so badly damaged, it earned its nickname, which means messed up beyond repair. In a joint ceremony Thursday, the Haida tribe and the Forest Service formally changed the creek's name to Honda Lahana, meaning beautiful river. Tribal elder Viola Burgess says it gave her great pride to see the creek restored to its near original condition and to see fish returning to spawn. The Forest Service, with support from the Nature Conservancy and other groups, spent the last several years and hundreds of thousands of dollars to repair the rivers. U.S. Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan is meeting with tribal educators in South Dakota today. He will hold a roundtable discussion and give a keynote address at a tribal college. This week, federal officials and tribal presidents from across the state and region held a press conference on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Charles Michael Ray reports.
Tribal college presidents praised the Obama administration's actions and called for more work to boost K-12 education in Indian country. Cynthia Lindquist is president of Chandeska Chistana Community College in North Dakota. She says tribal colleges are leading the way toward a new and brighter future for Indian country.
The dependency way of life has been taught to us, and we need to unlearn that and go back to our traditional roots and values.
Tribal college leaders in South Dakota also called on the state to allocate the same money for non-native students taught in tribal schools as state universities receive. Right now, tribal colleges in South Dakota don't get state funding when they teach non-native students. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture recently announced a loan to Du Bois Telephone Exchange to provide broadband services to rural communities, including service to the Wind River Reservation. Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone reports.
The loan for roughly $11.5 million will improve broadband communications in a number of rural areas in Wyoming by replacing copper lines with fiber optics, but it will also help provide broadband security for the state and the Wind River Reservation. As it stands, broadband fiber optic lines snake through about two-thirds of the state, from the northwest to the southeast and back north near its origin point. However, there's a gap between start and end, leaving broadband users vulnerable to major service problems should that line be cut anywhere. Du Bois Telephone Exchange General Manager Michael Kenny says apart from improving service on the reservation, closing that gap will prevent service cuts should lines be cut and provide a security incentive that could aid tribal economic development efforts.
The reservation is such a sleeping economic engine down there for Fremont County and the state of Wyoming. They have so many projects and how the fiber would affect it, but the biggest benefit to the main part of the reservation will be this protection to the fiber network.
The Wind River Reservation is home to one tribal college, three casinos, an assisted living center, as well as a technology center, hydroelectric project, and a number of wind farms. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
On this day in 1915, Andrew Gronholt was born in Sandpoint, Alaska. He was largely responsible for reviving the tradition of Aleut bentwood hat making. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are Torin Ulbrichsen, who is the program director for Big Brothers Big Sisters, and Lena Gilbertson, who is the recruiter. Here to talk about the school mentoring program. School started just a couple of days ago, didn't it?
Yep.
And how's school going?
Going good. We're excited that it's starting again and we can get the school-based program back up and running.
For those people who haven't heard about Big Brothers Big Sisters yet, could you give us an overview of the organization, please?
Absolutely. Big Brothers Big Sisters is a one-to-one mentoring relationship. Our mission is to help children reach their full potential through professionally supported one-to-one mentoring relationships. So we match children ages 6 through 17, and they can stay matched up until they're 18. And they can be, we have a few different programs. We have our community-based program, which is where matches meet 2 to 4 times per month. And they do things out in the community like go hiking, go swimming, bake cookies together, and do whatever kind of interests they have. And then our school-based program is 1 hour a week, and it's where matches meet at the school. And they can do things there at the school like play on the playground, eat lunch together, play board games, work on a puzzle, those types of activities. And then we have our Johnson Youth Center program, which is where we have volunteers match with youth who are in treatment at the Johnson Youth Center. And those are actually ages 16 through 21, so they are a little bit older. And they meet there at the site, and they can play sports. They have a kitchen there. They can work on culinary crafts. And they can do things like that. And then we also have our CHAMPS program, which is our newest program, and that's also with an older age range of teens, and that's 16 through 21 as well. And that's with teens who are transitioning out of the foster care system. And so those teens really need that extra support through that kind of difficult transition.
And you're here today to talk about the school-based mentoring program?
We are.
How does that work in general?
So it's matches who a volunteer will usually use their lunch hour to leave work, and they'll go over to the school that's nearest to them or the school that's easiest for them to access. And they'll meet with their little, and they can eat lunch together, and then they can play on the playground during recess time, or if it's a really windy, rainy day like today and they don't want to be outside, they can choose to stay inside in the library, and they can work on homework, or they can read a book, play a board game, or color together, or do an art project, or use the gym if it's available. Just any sort of activity there within the school boundaries.
You know, what's the recruitment process like?
The recruitment process? Well, first of all, if you have an interest, you can call us. You can come into our office as well. And we will set you up for an interview. We have a background check. And we do the same things with the little brothers and the little sisters. And then we set up matches based on interests and basically what each little and big wants in their relationship, and you go from there.
What kind of time span are you looking for in particular?
We ask for at least a one-year commitment, and we have some matches that have been matched for a lot longer than that, but of course some that are shorter, since a lot of people do sometimes seem to move out of Juneau if they can't handle the rain. But we do ask for at least a starting one-year commitment for the matches.
I guess there's been some empirical evidence about how well the school-based mentoring program works.
There has been a lot of evidence recently that proves that all of our programs are successful, and we do have a measurable impact on youth, a positive measurable impact.
Can you give some numbers for me?
I didn't bring those statistics with me, but matches show that if a child who is matched is less likely to act out in violence. They're less likely to hit someone. They're less likely to skip school, try drugs or alcohol, and they're more likely to graduate from high school and also go on to get a higher-paying job. And also in their community, they did a study showing with littles who were matched and then a group of children who were not matched, and the group of littles who are matched in our program were more likely to donate and give back to their communities and volunteer their time. So it really is making communities better.
How do you identify the littles that want to be matched?
It's kind of a wide range of things. Sometimes littles will identify themselves. They'll come up to us, or they'll have their parent or their teacher contact us because they'll want a big after seeing other matches in their school. For our school-based program in particular, sometimes they're referred by either a teacher or a counselor, but then ultimately we need parent approval. So the parent is also on board as well.
What schools are you looking for bigs to help come and help?
All of them. Right now, we have two little brothers waiting in Douglas, four little brothers downtown, six little brothers in the valley. And so all schools, we need big brothers at, and we could also use big brother or big sisters at all of the schools as well. So all elementary schools and the middle schools, we do not match. We don't have the school-based program in the high schools.
And you've got some upcoming events you'd like to talk about?
We do. We have our Dream Big Luncheon, which is our annual fundraiser for that. If anyone out there is interested in coming to our Dream Big Luncheon or hosting a table and getting a group of your friends together to come to our Dream Big Luncheon, you can call 586-3350 and ask for Caitlin McLaughlin.
Anything else you'd like to bring up before we go on to the next guest?
Yeah, just that we also have a lot of littles waiting right now in our community-based program. We have almost 30 littles in our community-based program waiting. And overall, right now in all of our programs, we have 49 littles waiting. So if you're interested, if your friend is interested, if it's something you've thought about, please give us a call. Please spread the word. If you know someone out there right now who you're thinking of, your coworker or your friend who would be really great as a big, please encourage them to call us.
And that phone number again is?
586-3350.
I've been talking to Torin Ulrichsen and Lena Gilbertson from the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization. Thank you for coming by the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
And I am all alone. There is no one here beside me. And my problems have all gone. There is no one to deride me. But you got to have friends. The feelings are so strong. You got to have friends to make that day last long. I had some friends, but they're gone. Someone came and took them away, and from the dust till the
Midler. Thanks to Sue Belita for providing that song for us this morning and also this afternoon. studio with us now is Abel Ryan. He's a Tsimshian carver. He's going to be doing some museum work tomorrow at the Alaska State Museum from 8:45 until 4 in the afternoon. Abel, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background, please?
I'm from Metlakatla, which is just south of Ketchikan, and I grew up there, went to school, studied Tsimshian art under Jack Hudson, who's a master carver there. He just recently retired, actually, just this end of this school year. Under him, I learned how to draw a form line and how to make my own carving tools, how to use my tools and care for them. When I graduated high school, I had a trade, and from there I went out and explored the world a little bit, and came to realize that I had a really deep love for art and for my culture, and started pursuing that more full time.
Seems like part of the process of learning how to carve is making your own tools.
It's pretty extensive. If you want to be a self-sufficient artist, learning how to craft your own tools is pretty important. It's allows you to be self-sustaining.
And how many tools do you use?
It depends on the project that I'm working on. I have about 9 regular carving knives that I use, and a wide variety of gouges and chisels that I also work with.
How does Tsimshian carving differ from Tlingit or Haida carving, or maybe another Northwest carving?
It's a basic style. There's a lot of similarities between the Northwest Coast form line up and down the coast, and it's just in how the form line is handled, how it's manipulated, the variances in the lines, how much negative space is incorporated in the design, simplicity versus complexity. Also, it depends on who's making the art.
And you have a degree in Native art from the University of Alaska Southeastern, University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Yes.
What kind of classes do you have to take to get a degree in Native art?
You have to find a place that offers classes in Native art studio. The University of Alaska Fairbanks has a really great Native arts program. You study Northwest Coast carving styles and the forms from all over Alaska. So you learn about a lot of other Alaska Native cultures as well, Yupik, Inupiat, Athabascan, Aleutic, Aleut, Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian. It's quite a broad spectrum that you study there.
Could you please describe the learning process where you start from knowing nothing to knowing a couple of things, or 3 or 4, or maybe a half a dozen?
Well, you start by looking at older objects, and then you start drawing. You can't carve if you can't draw. Well, that's not true. You can carve without drawing, but if you want your carving to come out well, learning how to draw the object is very helpful. Learning how to control your hand to be able to create the forms necessary for the art form. In Northwest Coast form line, you learn how to draw ovoids and U shapes and S shapes, and then you learn how to compose them into a design that represents something. It's learning how to be abstract.
As you learn more and more things, did you have to unlearn anything?
I'm always learning and I'm always unlearning. When I start learning things on my own, I a lot of times learn how to do things the hard way. And then when I finally have an opportunity to work with somebody, I have to unlearn most of what I just learned to be able to accept a better way of doing things, yes.
What kind of things do you carve?
I work with wood and metal, so I carve masks, bowls, spoons, ladles, plaques, hair combs, a wide variety of things. I try not to limit myself too much, otherwise I can get bored easily and I'm not growing if I just limit myself in what I do.
What does carving mean to you personally?
It means a lot. It means that I'm able to support myself and my family. It means that I am able to tie myself in with my culture in some form. It means that I'm able to have something that's of value to share and to teach others about. It's an opportunity to help make the world a better place. It's a lot for me.
Cool. I'm talking to Abel Ryan. He's a carver, and he's from Metlakatla, Sisimshian Carver. He's going to be doing some demonstrations tomorrow at the Alaska State Museum and also Sunday from 8:45 until 4. What are you going to be doing at the museum?
I'll be working on a few different things there. I'll have a lot of projects in process and finished. One of the things that I'll be carving while I'm there is a mask. I'm working on a mask out of yellow cedar. I'll probably be starting on another flute and possibly a couple rattles.
You ever tried your hand at a totem pole?
I've done a small one. I made a 2-footer, and I've had the opportunity to help with some bigger totem poles. I'm not sure if I'm ready for that big of a stick yet.
Abel Ryan, thank you very much for coming down to the station today. And he'll be doing some demonstrations of carving from 8:45 until 4 on Saturday and Sunday at the Alaska State Museum. Should be fascinating to watch.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 26th of August, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist Julio Cortazar, born Brussels, Belgium, to Argentine parents, 1914, who wrote dreamlike, fantastic stories collected in the English translation Blow Up and other stories. In one story, a man reading a mystery novel becomes the murder victim in the novel he is reading. Man staring at an animal in a zoo realizes that he's become that animal. In another, a man in a hospital dreams that he's about to be sacrificed by Aztecs, only to realize that he actually is about to be sacrificed by Aztecs, and he's only been dreaming that he was in a hospital. It's the birthday of the French-Italian-Polish poet Guillaume Apollinaire, born 1880 in Rome, born Wilhelm Albert Vladimir Apollinaris Kostrowitzki, the illegitimate child of a Polish woman who was living in the Vatican. He was raised in gambling dens in Italy, Monaco, Paris, and on the French Riviera. When he was young, he assumed the identity of a Russian prince. He was a friend of Picasso's, but a poet by vocation and credited with coining the word surrealism. Joined the infantry during World War I, wrote poetry in the trenches, suffered a head wound, died of influenza during the epidemic of 1918. It's the birthday of Albert Sabin, born 1906 in Bialystok, Poland, to Jewish parents. The last name was Saperstein. Family immigrated to this country in 1921, started his research on polio while he was still a medical student at NYU, and later at the University of Cincinnati proved that the polio virus entered the body not through the respiratory tract, but through the digestive tract. And so he set out to create an oral vaccine, which was approved for use in 1960, and the Sabin vaccine became the vaccine of choice around the world. It's the birthday of Stephen J. Dubner, born Duanesburg, New York, 1963, co-author of Freakonomics. His parents were both raised Jewish but converted to Catholicism. Dubner, raised Catholic, converted to Judaism as an adult. He wrote, "We have chosen our religion rejecting what we inherited for what we felt we needed. This is a particularly American opportunity. Here's a poem for today by Sam Hamill, entitled Lifer, McNeil Island Correctional Center. Hunched over hard white bread and plastic soup bowl filled with gruel, he looked like a stork, a silly angel, all neck and bony shoulder wings and awkward beak. His head lifted, then fell in a slow, deliberate dance, 3-4 times, doughy-skinned in a gray room sickened by yellow light. He kept his eyes shut tight. Outside the prison dining hall, a turnkey slammed and locked the heavy iron gate. The old man placed his palms together softly, raised them to his stubbled chin, crossed himself, and ate. Lifer, a poem by Sam Hamill, from his book Almost Paradise, published by Shambhala Publications and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:26 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. The Saturday hike for tomorrow will be the Windfall Lake Trail. You should wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots, obviously. Bring ice cleats for slippery boardwalks, wear warm layers of clothing, and bring plenty of food and water. You should meet at the Windfall Lake Trailhead at 9:30 in the morning. Turn right at 27 Mile Glacier Highway down a dirt road just before the Herbert River Bridge. No dogs or firearms, please. They say carpooling is encouraged. If you need more information about that, call the City and Borough of Juneau at 586-5226. In the studio with me now is Katie Bosler from the University of Alaska Southeast, where school has not started yet, but it's going to start on Thursday, the 1st of September.
Exactly. What a day to start school. September 1st, 2011.
Rah, rah, rah.
Yes. So, yes, Jeff, it's good to be here back with you for UAS Corner on a Juneau afternoon. And I just want to let everybody know kind of what's happening next week. We're all gearing up for the fall semester to start. So Monday is move-in day for student housing. So that's when, our orientation people and our student services will be welcoming all the new students who are moving into Banfield Hall and the apartments out there. And just FYI, the UAS orientation staff is providing transportation from both the ferry terminal and the airport. Also, on Monday evening, this is a heads up for anybody who plans to be a part-time student. And this is just if you're taking, fewer than 12 credits, it's geared towards people who work during the day. So the part-time student orientation is this coming Monday evening, the 29th. And you check in at 5 o'clock at the Glacier View Room in Egan 221. And then there's a dinner, and there's you learn about the different parts of the university, the Novotny One Stop, where's the cashier's desk and the admissions office, the Morant Cafeteria, which in the bottom floor of Morant, of course, is Student Services, where we have our Native and Rural Student Center, we have our Health Center, we have our Exchange Office, we have counseling available. And then it's just kind of there'll be a wrap-up at the Rec Center at about 8. So it's kind of 5 to 8, just overview of the university for new part-time students on Monday night. And if you want any more information about that or to see the schedule, you can just go to uas.alaska.edu/orientation. Then on Tuesday and Wednesday is a very important time at the university each fall, and this is full-time student orientation. Now, in case any of you are not aware who are planning to go to UAS this fall as new students, full-time students, that means you're taking 12 credits or more. Orientation is required for new students. So And, of course, it's highly recommended for students who are taking less than 12 credits. So to sign up, there's a form online. Again, you go to that website, uas.alaska.edu/orientation, or you can just show up at the rec center at 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning the 30th, and you can sign up right there. The rec center, for those of you who aren't aware, is just on the other side of the Back Loop Road from the back part of the university, and it is a joint use facility with the National Guard. And then also on Tuesday is a parent orientation, and that's just really advised for any local parents. Some parents come from out of town. That's an all-day event, and the parents meet at 9 o'clock on the Glacier View Room. That's Egan 221. If you want to see any of the full schedules, again, for any of these orientation events, you can go to ues.alaska.edu/orientation. And the student orientation, new full-time student orientation, lasts 2 days, and it culminates in a always popular whale-watching cruise from Auk Bay.
Is there a charge for the whale-watching cruise?
No, but you have to be a new student.
Oh.
So it's kind of full already.
Okay, there's my chance for being a smart guy.
Sorry about that, Jeff. And then also I just want to let people know that there are some openings in our fall courses still. And openings, the courses included in this opportunity are audio and video production, automotive and construction technology, health sciences. Those are all under the career education school. Actually, automotive and construction and health sciences are with career ed. Audio and video production are with communications, which is part of the School of Arts and Sciences. Also, there's theater classes that have openings and Tlingit language classes that have openings. And for the last time this year, we'll be offering the piano master class with Alexander Tutinov. Alexander Tutinov will also be kicking off the Evening at Egan series. Mark your calendars, Friday night, the 16th of September. But if you have been meaning to take a master class with Alexander Tutinov, this is your last opportunity. So if you want to register for any of these classes, you can come to the Novotny One Stop on our Auk Lake campus. So if you just come out to the campus, it's kind of in the middle of our buildings overlooking the lake there, and you'll see a welcome sign, and you just walk, you know, under the welcome sign and take a left, and that's where you can register for classes. You can also do this online at uas.alaska.edu/registrar. Again, that's uas.alaska.edu/registrar. And if you want any more information about this, you can just call 796-6100. The people answering the phones at this number and the Novotny One Stop are open 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday. And I just also want to let people know, Jeff, that, you know, just because classes start Thursday the 1st, that doesn't mean you can't register and enroll through the following week or even later, depending on when the course starts. So just want everybody to know that fall semester is kicking off at the University of Alaska Southeast.
And the big question is, will Spike the Whale be there to greet incoming students?
Oh, that is a good question. You know what? I think we might have to get Spike on it. Thank you, Jeff.
Not a problem.
This is why I come here, so I can get some advice like this from you. You
some
know?
Advice that's a reporter's question. And my other tough question is, what's going to be happening today on KRNN at 5 o'clock?
Oh, on KRNN, well, I am also the volunteer host of Friday Tideline with KDB on 102.7, and around 5:30 today, Marion Call, a singer-songwriter from Anchorage, who you are about to interview, Jeff, will be also on my show, Friday Tideline with KDB, 5:30 to 6. We'll have Marion Call from Anchorage, and she's absolutely fascinating. I think people are going to look forward to this interview with you, Jeff. She's a one woman band. No, actually not band. She has some musicians, but the way that she promotes her music is quite interesting. A real innovative use of social media.
Katie Butler, thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
Here's a little bit of music from Marion Call herself.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squareitude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek,
without the horn-rimmed glasses and knee-high argyle socks. But nerdery is more than wardrobe deep, and I'm a nerd down in my heart, and that's where nerdhood rocks. I'm better acquainted than a good girl ought to be with Aragorn and Yosef Bridge and Worf and Hal and Han. But you don't really know me, and my culture don't control me, so don't you pigeonhole me, cause my phasers seem to stun. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girl should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say. My superpower's draining fun from parties, but if I am a misfit, then I'm in good company with Auden, Austin, Hawking, Galileo, and Van Gogh, and countless other weirdos whom you really ought to know. So stow your expectations, no, I won't fix your PC, and I don't mind being underrated or ignored. The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I'll still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end. In '04, Dequan's dance groove swept the country, and suddenly old moon boots were Italian haute couture. Time magazine reported that our time had finally come. I guess they didn't know that we already ran the world. Oh, I have been.
Singer-songwriter and self-proclaimed nerd Marion Call. She's performing in concert tomorrow night at the Rookery, and she's here in the studio. Marion, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jeff.
Self-proclaimed nerd.
Yes, I am. It took a while to come to grips with it. I think everyone else knew I was a nerd before I was willing to admit it, but it was pretty obvious from the time I was small.
And you're playing tomorrow night at the Rookery.
Yeah.
A little bit about your background. How did you get started in music, and then how did you get started performing?
My family's musical, so I actually can't remember before I was performing. I grew up doing it my whole life, classical, jazz, pop, anything. I sang at weddings from the time I was a little girl, sang in church, sang out of church, sang in school, and pretty much stuck to classical and jazz. And then I moved to Alaska and started hearing just fantastic singer-songwriters locally here and a lot of folks who tour up here, and I thought that really connected with me. It was a lot of fun, so I thought that was the kind of music I would like to do for a living.
When did you start writing music?
Writing probably in high school, and my degree was in composition, but that was much more kind of classical and choral music. I started doing singer-songwriter stuff after I moved to Anchorage, about probably 2 years after I moved to Anchorage, and I recorded my first record just a couple years ago, 2007.
Took a look at your website. It's a lot of fun, as all the songs are on it. Do you expect it to be fun, or is you more serious about it?
Um, write some fun songs and some serious songs. Like, not everything is nerdy and goofing off, but there is a lot of that. I think I found once I started touring that it's more fun to play the funny songs in concert. I like writing serious stuff too, but and I do a lot of that. But the songs that wind up coming out in the concerts usually is the funny stuff. So,
cool. What are you going to be performing tomorrow?
What will I be performing tomorrow? Oh, well, several things. I'll be performing for 2 hours. You want the whole set list?
No.
I'll do some of the... I brought my typewriter down, so I'll be playing the nerd song that we just heard, and I think Vanilla, which you said we might hear later. And a lot of silly songs, a lot of things about, like... They sound like everyday songs about love and relationships, but for the most part, they're inspired by things like spaceships and broccoli and you know, just real-life experiences that I think we have more often than... like falling in love and things that everyone else opts to write about.
And you just got back from a 50-state tour.
Yes, that was quite exciting.
How was it besides just exciting?
Besides just exciting, it was exhausting. It was thrilling. I really liked going to a lot of places that I had ideas about and talking to people there and learning that they were, of course, quite different from what people thought, and seeing them. I was a tourist, I guess, but I got to stay in people's homes and do a lot of house concerts, so I got to really just meet folks and get a little more than the tourist perspective on a lot of places that changed my ideas about the country. I liked it.
What was the biggest and the smallest places you've played on your tour?
Well, Alaska's the biggest and Rhode Island's the smallest.
As far as venues?
Oh. I think my smallest house concert on the 50 States tour was 6 people, and that was fine. We had a good time. And the biggest I played at Wootstock, which is a nerd event. It's like sort of like vaudeville for nerds. I played at the San Diego Wootstock, and that was very large. I think it was 1,000-ish people. But, yeah, and everything in between. Most of my concerts are probably between 15 and 60, 70 people.
What's the songwriting process for you? Does it come out all at once, or is it something you have to craft over a number of weeks or months or years?
I'm a crafter. Usually I wait for a hook, and once I have a hook, then I will sort of build a song around that. Like, it's kind of feels like doing math for me. It's sort of a left brain process, but it's very it's a lot of fun. I like it. I don't find it's difficult, or, you know, a lot of people describe it as wrestling or as, you know, fighting an idea or having angst about it. And for me, it's just very it's very easy and fun, natural.
Talking to Marion Call, who's going to be performing tomorrow night at the Recreation. What time does the concert start?
The concert's at 7 o'clock. It goes till 9. Hoping a bunch of people come. I think it's going to be fun.
Should be a lot of fun. What's been your most embarrassing moment on the tour so far?
Most embarrassing moment on the tour? I don't embarrass easy, I guess. Let me see. No, I'm sure there's something. It's just not coming to mind. I try to remember the happy moments better than the embarrassing ones. I'm sure I made a sort of regional joke at some point that didn't go over well, I bet. But I'm just trying to remember where that would have happened. I'm sure my fans could tell you.
You have a great website. You want to, is it just MarionCall.com?
Yeah, MarionCall.com. I'm also a pretty Facebooky person. I'm over at facebook.com/MarionCallMusic, and I kind of chat with people all the time there, and on Google+ and on Twitter. I do a lot online that enables me to live in Alaska but still keep in touch with fans outside and tour outside.
And you have one CD out so far?
Oh, I have a bunch of I have 3 albums out so far. This one will be my 4th, but only one's on CD right now. So you were right about one CD. And the new one coming out is going to be a double pretty soon here. Should be announcing that any day now. So.
All right. So we're going to be hearing a song called Vanilla. You want to talk about that, please?
Oh, Vanilla? Yeah, I feel like a lot of music, popular music especially, is a sort of exciting, exotic, rock and roll, misbehaving culture that I really don't understand. You know, I'm very much not a party girl, and a lot of people sort of presume that I'm living the wild life as a musician running around, when really I'm sort of a cup of tea and good book and game of cribbage kind of person. So I feel like I need to apologize for that sometimes, and this song is sort of my it's starts out as an apology for not being wild, sexy, and crazy and dancing on tables and demanding attention in that way, but it winds up being sort of an affirmation that maybe that's an okay way to be if you are that way.
Marion Cole, thank you so much for coming down to the station and talking about your music. Again, she's performing tomorrow at the Rookery. Starts at 7 o'clock. How much is the concert?
The concert is free, though we're encouraging an artist tip of $5 to $10 since I've come a long way to be here.
I'll say, well, thank you so much for being in the radio station with us today. And again, if you're going to be on KRNN at 5:30 or so, and then you're also on KXLL between now and then.
That's right. Thank you.
One, two, three. I'm not sexy, but I really want to be. I hear that's normal for my demographic. I don't look good in skirts, and even wedges hurt my feet. And I can't keep a straight face and say orgasmic. Oh, I'm not hip, but I really want to be. All the bands I like you've heard of, and I watch too much TV. And I'm not cute, and I think too much to be sweet. And not enough to get a real job or converse insightfully. This is the part where you politely disagree. My virtues are too dull to entertain, but you can always count on me. One, two, three. A nicely balanced budget's not so thrilling. And courtesy's outdated, and sobriety is lame. Reliability is not appealing, but I don't know any other way to be. I love people, and I want them to love me. My virtues are vanilla at best, but you can always call on. Took me out last Saturday night, and I could tell I'm a square. I asked him, baby, where are we going? And he said, apparently nowhere. He said, you don't fuck and you don't fight, so what use have I got for you? I said, my crimes may not be half so entertaining as yours, but let me tell you, baby, what I can do.
Call performing tomorrow night at the Rookery. Concert starts at 7 o'clock and goes till about 9 o'clock or so. The studio with us now is Frances Field, here to talk about the Juno Lyric Opera's Diva concert coming up. Who's the best diva in Juno? We'll find out, or will we not?
I think we will.
I'm sorry, one more time?
I think we will find out. It's going to be a tough competition, but these divas are rearing and ready to go, and someone's going to be crowned.
So overview of the event, please.
Well, the event is called Who's Your Diva, and it is basically a musical throwdown of diva-like proportions. Juno's never seen anything like this. We've hand-selected, Juno Lyric Opera has hand-selected 10 female vocalists who they think possess outstanding singing qualities in Juno, and they are coming together to give a live performance on September 10th at the Arts Council at the Jack, and they are going to be crowned by to see who can raise the most money.
So it's not necessarily who the best singer is.
Not always, no. I mean, lucky for us, we have 10 really good singers. But really, it comes down to who can really wow the crowd, who's a good fundraiser. You know, this event is really about working the crowd and coming up with an act. They've each chosen two songs to sing. And you're not, you know, when people hear Juno Lyric Opera, they automatically think opera. This is not opera. I actually know for a fact that none of the divas have selected any operatic pieces.
Does the fundraising go in before the concert, or does it happen during the concert?
Both. They've been fundraising. I think we started off in May, and so they've been going around and passing out donation forms, and we have online donations set up with their fancy diva photographs and links so people can make online donations. And then there's a huge push at the event itself to raise more money.
And the event is happening when?
It is September 10th at the Jack.
And who are the divas that are going to be competing?
The divas that are competing are Melinda League, Sarah Johnson, Alaska's Kit, Eve Dillingham, Heather Mitchell, Laura Haywood, Shona Strausser, Kari Gruben, Megan Feltz, and Patricia Hull.
Sounds like a fun event.
It's going to be a great event. And we also have three musicians, Mike Moss on piano and guitar, Dale McFarlane playing percussion for us, Simon Taylor on bass, and then we have a lot of guest artists that are going to be coming in and playing additional instruments.
Have you been rehearsing all together, or is it individual divas record individually?
Actually, the divas have been rehearsing individually with just Mike, the piano player, and then also a few with the band. However, they have an opening act where they all sing a song called Hard to Be Diva. And we had that on Wednesday, and they really wowed me. We were so excited. Mike and I just started jumping up and down when they started singing. It's going to be so much fun.
Where'd the idea come from?
Well, we actually stole it with permission. Ketchikan has a great community theater called First City Players, and I hail from Ketchikan. I used to be really involved in it. And they've been doing this event, and they just called it Divas. And so I called up their executive director, and I said, hey, you know, Juno Lyric Opera needs a second fundraiser. Can we steal this? And Elizabeth said, absolutely. We stole it from someone else. They stole it from somebody. So I think all over the U.S. there's diva competitions.
Not to detract from the divaness of this interview, but what other activities are happening with the Juno Lyric Opera this year?
Oh, gosh. We have La Boheme coming up in November. And then there will be the Midwinter Vocal Festival and Holiday Pops in December and January. And the Messiah in the spring.
The website?
Yes, www.junoopera.org, and everything about the Who's Your Divas, as well as all the divas and their bios and glamour shots, all on there.
All right, Frances Field from the Juno Lyric Opera talking about who's the biggest diva? Is that what it is?
Who's Your Diva.
Who's Your Diva.
Yeah, and you can buy tickets on the website, too, or at the Arts Council or Hearthside.
Sounds like fun. Anything I want to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, we're just really excited, and it's going to be a really fun event. There'll also be food at the event and beverages. So it's going to be a blast.
Are you expecting any violence between the contestants?
Yes, absolutely. definitely some cat fights, I believe. When they were rehearsing their song, you get 10 divas up there on stage, and there was definitely some hogging of the mic and a little bit of pushing and shoving. So that's going to be entertaining in itself.
One mic, 10 divas, I can't imagine the confusion there.
Well, there were three, actually, but they'll somehow make do.
That sounds, again, like a lot of fun. Concert again is when?
September 10th, Saturday, September 10th, 7:30 at the Jack. Buy your tickets early because we are having a huge early ticket sale surge, so we may sell out, and I hope we will.
Francis Field, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff. My love, a man, oh baby.
It's Friday, and your week is finally winding down. Take a radio break. Take a listen to Friday Tideline with Katie B., an eclectic mix of pop, rock, folk, country, blues, indie, and alternative. New music with room for your old favorites. Friday, 5 to 7 p.m., KRNN, 102.7 FM.
Juno's own singer-songwriter Buddy Tabor is performing in concert on Saturday, August 27th at 7:30 at Resurrection Lutheran Church.
Empty words of promise.
Opening will be Jim and Martha Stagg. Don't miss this Alaska Folk Festival event, Buddy Tabor in concert, on Saturday, August 27th, 7:30 p.m. at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Tickets are available at the door.
Music of Zool Bailey. He'll be performing for Monday, Labor Day, that's September 5th, at the University of Alaska Southeast Eakin Library. Concert benefit concert for the Juno Jazz and Classics Folks, co-sponsored by KTOO in Juno here. You're tuned to KTOO. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Davis listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inlet at Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And Juno, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up next Monday on Juno Afternoon, we'll talk with some of the divas involved in Who's Your Diva. Leslie Wood from the Juno Pride Chorus will talk about their new season and Friday's Whale Watch Cruise. That's a week from tomorrow, week from today's Whale Watch Cruise, excuse me. Amanda Compton will talk with Juno's new rabbi, and we'll meet Pat Moore, future guest host for Juno Afternoon. We'll also hear the Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more tomorrow, next Monday at 3 on a Juno Afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with scattered showers, low temperatures around 48 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and high temperatures and 59 degrees. Saturday night, more rain. Sunday looks like more rain with high temperatures around 55 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today, and have a great weekend.